The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
The time now is 2:53 by the clock. And orders of the day, oral questions put by members, 2:53, the time will go to 3:53, and we'll recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday was not a pretty day when it came to the delivery of the H1N1 vaccination. Confusion, mixed messages, long waits, and a restriction on those eligible to receive the vaccine are all factors in a situation that is about to become even more ugly very soon if this government does not take control of the situation. This government raised expectations. They told everyone who wanted to be vaccinated to come and get one. And now they are forced to scale back for who knows how long. We have Nova Scotians in some DHAs who were fortunate enough to be vaccinated last week, and a government who is now telling individuals in the Capital District and indeed others they now cannot. So my question for the Premier is, why did your government not prioritize administration of the vaccine from the outset so that those most at risk would have been able to receive it?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Leader of the Opposition for the question. Right from the very beginning, the message of the government was that those who are in the higher risk categories should make sure that they get the vaccine, that they get it as soon as they were able. And, Mr. Speaker, the message today is the same. It is that those people who are in the identified high risk categories should get the vaccine and should do so as soon as they can.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The message from the government from day one was that all Nova Scotians get in line. There was no prioritizing of those most vulnerable in our community, and that's why we're at the point we are today, Mr. Speaker, why some who need this vaccine are not getting it. Mr. Speaker, healthcare workers are trying their utmost to work as quickly and as efficiently as they can, but they are running into obstacles put in place and created by this government. This is a government who has failed to prioritize from the outset, leaving segments of our population vulnerable and frustrated. People are angry, and they have lost confidence in this government, and they have no reassurance that anything will change. Supply for vaccines will continue to be the biggest challenge as we move forward. So my question for the Premier, where is your plan to tell Nova Scotians how we will handle the supply issue in the coming weeks?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The issue with respect to the supply of vaccine is well known. It's one that's been communicated. There is a slowdown currently with respect to supply. The Chief Medical Officer has set out who the highest at-risk groups are. I've communicated that in as many forms as is possible to ensure that those people are aware that they should be making themselves available for the vaccine. We're going to continue to do that, and as the amount of vaccine comes into the province increases, we will of course broaden those categories, and that message will be communicated directly to those groups again through the media, through the various methods that we have at our disposal, including paid advertising in some cases.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Supply did not become an issue last week. Supply has been an issue from the very onset of trying to administer this vaccine. The challenging here in Nova Scotia is that there was no plan to make sure that those most vulnerable in our communities were at the front of the line. This government told all Nova Scotians to get in line, and because of that, Many Nova Scotians who need that vaccine now are being left and told to wait till tomorrow. Mr. Speaker, it is not me asking. It is not the Liberal caucus who was asking. It is the general public who wants answers from this government. Last week, the chief medical officer indicated that 160,000 doses of vaccine had been delivered to Nova Scotians on October 30th, with another 17,900 doses expected this week. So my question for the Premier, how many of those 160,000 doses of vaccine are actually being put in the arms of Nova Scotians as of today?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, that's a good question, Mr. Speaker. As the Leader of the Opposition knows, that information exists among the various DHAs. All that data is being brought together so that we can track not only who is getting the vaccine, but how many of our citizens are getting the vaccine as well. This is important for a number of reasons, because if there are adverse reactions to the vaccine, we have to be able to track the vaccine batches, as he knows. Part of the plan with respect to the rollout of this vaccine, and what we will be able to do over time is to bring that information into the Department of Health, and then from there we'd be happy to transmit it to the Leader of the Opposition.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Nova Scotia's Public Health Office reported this morning that vials of H1N1 vaccine had been distributed to public health offices through public health offices destined for district health authorities, doctors' offices and clinics across Nova Scotia. My question to the Premier is this. How much of that vaccine has already been administered to frontline health care workers?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out to the Leader of the Official Opposition, that information exists out in the district health authorities. It's data that has to be inputted. Once we receive that information, we're happy to transmit it to the opposition parties. What is important, though, Mr. Speaker, is that the vaccine is out in the district health authority and is being administered to healthcare workers and the others who need to get this vaccine first.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it seems to me it's pretty important to know how much has been administered before you know whether you can move on to the next group. Recognizing frontline health workers have been identified as priorities for this vaccine, what mechanism does the Minister of Health have in place for the DHAs to report whether they had the supply that was not enough, just enough, or more than enough? So that she can be confident and Nova Scotians can be confident that frontline workers have been immunized.
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's daily communications between the Department of Health, the Minister, and the district health authorities for the purposes of ensuring that that information is being shared. And Mr. Speaker, it is literally changing hour by hour, day by day, Mr. Speaker. So I'm sure the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party would understand that. There's a lot that's being done in the rollout of this plan already to make sure that the people who need the vaccine most get it first, and that's what's important to this government.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Four groups have been identified as priorities for receiving the vaccine. The Minister has the statistics to tell her how many people are in each group. This tells her what supply is required for immunizing each group. Will the Premier ask his Minister to share with all Nova Scotians the expected timeline to move from one priority to the other, recognizing that she has the stats for both demand and supply?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reality is, as was explained to the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party earlier this morning, by the Chief Medical Officer of Health, that they were comfortable that the amount of vaccine that is now with the DHAs is sufficient to cover the existing groups who are in that very high-risk category. That's exactly the information that was transmitted. Unfortunately, and this is the case, the questions associated with supply are being monitored by the Minister of Health in connection or in collaboration with the federal government, who was the contractor for the vaccine.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Nova Scotians are becoming increasingly frustrated when it comes to this government's rollout plan for H1N1 vaccinations. Each province seems to have a different set of rules around the development of their priority list, and despite the fact that we severely restricted those eligible for the H1N1 vaccination, long waits continue to plague clinics from one end of the province to the other. My question for the minister is, could the minister please indicate whether these long waits are as a result of not having enough human resources, or is it a lack of vaccine supply that's the problem?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the long lines are because we have lots of families with young children under the age of 5. We have pregnant women. We have many people in the target groups, Mr. Speaker. You cannot move literally thousands of people through a clinic instantly, Mr. Speaker. It takes a considerable period of time. And, Mr. Speaker, we have added health human resources to our clinics. Mr. Speaker, we are talking with the Capital District and other DHAs about mechanisms that we can put in place to make these lines move more efficiently, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, the volume of calls and emails I've received have been overwhelming. Some parents want to know why they can't be vaccinated here, and they could if they lived in New Brunswick. Many parents are upset when they arrive at clinic with multiple children, and some can be vaccinated and others have to wait, who knows how long. Frustrations are building and the public is pointing their fingers squarely at government. My question to the minister is, why has government failed to deliver clear, concise, consistent messages around the delivery of these H1N1 vaccines?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would remind members of this House that this is a situation that is evolving as we go forward. We will have to make changes as we assess our supply. And, Mr. Speaker, as we get information with respect to who is at highest risk from the H1N1 virus, Mr. Speaker. And that is a process that occurs on a daily basis, and we will communicate any additional changes to the program to the public as we make these decisions, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The people of Nova Scotia know who to hold accountable when it comes to the rollout of a mass vaccination plan. Public health workers, healthcare workers, volunteers are all doing their utmost to deliver a mass immunization plan. They are not to blame. But a poorly conceived plan comes from the top. Leadership starts at the top. Given that the Minister of Health refused to tell Nova Scotians last night on ATV who is to blame and who is responsible, my final question is for the Premier. Could the Premier please tell us exactly who is responsible for this mess?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the planning for this has been underway for many months. The Chief Medical Officer of Health, along with the Deputy Minister responsible, has worked on the continuation of the plan that was originally drafted by the former government. All of the provinces right across the country are experiencing exactly the same kinds of difficulties that Nova Scotia is experiencing. You know, you could have gone literally last weekend to any newspaper in the country and you would have seen exactly exactly the same problem, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, one of the things that is fortunate for this province is that we haven't run out of vaccine. We're going to continue to inoculate those who are in the high-risk groups, Mr. Speaker, as is appropriate, making sure that they get the vaccine first. Unfortunately, some provinces are even now very close to running out of vaccine.
Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Mental health continues to take a backbench when it comes to being a health priority in our province. Despite 1 in 5 Nova Scotians suffering from mental illness in any given year, only about 4.5% of the overall health budget goes to mental health and addictions. Over the last several months, a number of psychiatrists have either left Nova Scotia or left hospital service, leaving fewer doctors who can treat people in need. There are many faces to the doctor shortage in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, which this government promised to end. So my question to the Premier is, what is the province doing to retain and attract psychiatrists to Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've recognized for some time that mental health issues in this province have not been addressed in the way that they should be. It's why the Minister of Health has been looking at this issue and looking at the various ways that we can go about providing services to those who have mental health issues. And, you know, it's not an easy it's not an easy fix, Mr. Speaker, but it certainly is going to take more than 4 months. It's laying out a plan to attract and retain mental health professionals. It's part of the ongoing work of the department. I'm sure the Leader of the Official Opposition understands that.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In September, Dr. Amir Umar left the Cumberland Regional Hospital because I got a better financial deal to practice in New Brunswick. The Quebreton Regional Hospital lost 4 psychiatrists in 6 months. Another psychiatrist at Capitol Health will be leaving next month, bringing the provincial total to at least 6. The South Shore Regional Hospital in Bridgewater does not have a single psychiatrist on call during the weekends. To make matters worse, psychiatrists in Capitol Health and the IWK have been working without a permanent multi-year contract since 2006. So my question to the Premier is, how many more psychiatrists have to leave Nova Scotia hospitals before your government takes action?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, of course, the roots of the decisions that were made by psychiatrists to leave the province would go back more than a couple of months. I'm sure the Leader of the Opposition understands that. But what I can tell him is that there has been a negotiated agreement with those doctors, and that is in the process of being approved over the next week or so.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government promised psychiatrists at Capitol Health and the IWK that there would be a new contract on the table by October 31st. Well, Halloween has come and gone, and it appears the government has played a trick on mental health professionals in this province. Every day, our health care system struggles to provide children, young people, adults, seniors with mental health who need mental health care in every corner of this province, and this government chooses to ignore them. So my question for the Premier is, why did your government break its promise to bring forward a new contract to psychiatrists providing much-needed service in Capitol Health and the IWK?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, simply not true, Mr. Speaker. There has been a memorandum of understanding signed with respect to these physicians. It's a matter of having the AFP approved, which is going to be done shortly.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Even while Nova Scotians are facing the H1N1 pandemic, 3,500 hospital workers in 8 district health authorities across Nova Scotia do not have a contract today. This includes lab technicians, maintenance staff, cafeteria workers, clerical staff, social workers, MRI technicians, most all employees, Mr. Speaker, with the exception of nurses and doctors. The first of the 18 strike votes takes place on Thursday in Sydney. My question to the Premier is this. How long will you allow this to go before you will ask your Minister of Labour and Workforce Development to prepare and engage a special conciliator to bring all parties back to the table?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My understanding is that they have filed for conciliation. There are timelines in that process, and they will be observed.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know, and I'm not going to ask the Premier to negotiate on the House floor of the House. I know the answer. I'm not going to ask that question. I would not expect him to. But I would expect that he respect the hospital workers who need to be treated with respect and to achieve wage parity. So can you assure these hospital workers that, unlike the community college teachers, you will not play games with them, telling them you have no money, and then at the 11th hour finding the money needed to resolve the dispute?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, I can tell the member opposite that I don't intend to disrespect them by bringing in legislation that would take away their collective bargaining rights or installing a contract without any negotiation. Mr. Speaker, there is a process for negotiating contracts, and we're going to allow that to go forward.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this question is very simple. Does this Premier believe in wage parity between hospital workers in Capital District and the other eight district health authorities?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, all these issues are negotiated by the parties at the table, and the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party knows that to be the case, and I'm going to make sure that we respect the collective bargaining process by leaving collective bargaining at the table.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you. My question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday marked the official opening of what was described by the Minister of Justice back in August as a new beginning to helping people with mental illness who find themselves before the criminal justice system. Today's media reports indicate that by Thursday of this week, the new mental health court will deal with its first case. What government failed to tell the people of Nova Scotia is that last week, the Capitol Health psychiatrist informed the Department of Justice they will not be able to participate in the mental health court because they have gone more than 3 years without a permanent contract. So my question to the Premier is, can the Premier explain the impact of not having any psychiatrists participate in the mental health court?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I can say is that, as I mentioned to him earlier, the memorandum of understanding has been signed. I understand that the doctors have been told that the substance of that agreement will be instituted, those pay scales will start to be rolled out as soon as possible, and we're going to move forward with the AFP as expected.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Mental Health Court was supposed to be a made in Nova Scotia approach to a serious problem, addressing the needs of people with mental illness issues who come before the court. The provincial government promised Capitol Health and the IWK psychiatrists that there would be a new contract in place by the end of October. This government broke its promise to the psychiatrists, and unfortunately, psychiatrists are left with no choice but to hold back on providing additional services until a contract is in place. So my question to the Premier is, what is your government's contingency plan to operating the mental health court without psychiatrists?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is no need for a contingency plan because the memorandum of agreement that was signed is going to be honoured. The AFP is going to be instituted. That would resolve the problem with the doctors.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Premier, it's Thursday, 2 days from now, and you know full well that will not be solved, and this issue has been in front of your government from day one. You've been from day one, and you left Nova Scotians with mental illness in the dark on this issue, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, psychiatrists are starting to leave our province and our hospitals because they've gone without a competitive contract for more than 3 years. What has become abundantly clear is that Nova Scotia does not have a plan to deal with the mental health issues in this province. The contract issue with psychiatrists makes a bad situation even worse, which we are now seeing with the mental health court. So my final question to the Premier, will the Premier personally intervene to ensure his government's commitment to mental health care professionals are kept?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I've already said that with respect to the memorandum of understanding, that those commitments are going to be kept. But what's abundantly clear is that the Leader of the Official Opposition doesn't understand what a mental health court is, doesn't understand how it works, doesn't understand that it is a collaborative, of a collaborative nature that looks to resolve problems over a long period of time. So, you know, we on this side were the champions of the mental health court. We're the ones who made sure that it got instituted, Mr. Speaker. That's right. So, Mr. Speaker, those people who will benefit from that facility will benefit because of the work done by the members on this side of the House and the Minister of Health and the Minister of Justice.
The Honourable Member for Argyll.
She's had for that answer. I don't know if I want to ask another one. Boy. Mr. Speaker, my question to you is to the Minister of Health. On CTV's question period Sunday, the Federal Minister of Health, Leona Aglukkaq, said, the provinces and territories agreed to sequencing guidelines in September concerning the H1N1 vaccine, and the guidelines were developed to assist the provinces and territories rollout of the vaccine and will be able to focus on priority groups. With the minister having agreed to this info in September, why would she believe she could open the doors to the full general public when she already knew the supply would not meet the demand?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have always in this program of vaccination encouraged the high priority groups to go and get vaccinated first, Mr. Speaker. However, we knew that there would be logistical problems if a family, for example, showed up with a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old, turning that family away and saying the 6-year-old could not get vaccinated. And at the time, Mr. Speaker, we believed we would have an adequate supply of vaccine to be able to manage those kinds of difficulties. But, Mr. Speaker, with the reduction in supply, it became clear that we would have to impose much more rigid management of the vaccination program, which would require that only pregnant women, only children under 5, only residents of First Nations community, and only healthcare workers on the front lines get priority vaccination. And that's what we've done, Mr. Speaker. And we monitor the supply daily, and as we're able to broaden the vaccination program, we will certainly do so, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyll on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Through you again to the Minister of Health. Also during question period on Sunday, the Minister Aglukkaq said, the provinces and territories deliver health care, and it is best that they make decision on how they roll out the H1N1 vaccine. The question is, recognizing that it was the Minister's responsibility, how did she use the statistics available to identify priority groups and put them on the schedule for receiving vaccines?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're not using statistics to determine who gets vaccine. Mr. Speaker, we are looking at who will get sickest if they get H1N1, and we are providing protection for those people first, Mr. Speaker, because we don't want people in our emergency rooms, in our ICUs, Mr. Speaker, for many, many weeks, if pregnant women, if children under 5 members of First Nations communities, or health care workers are sick, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, statistics are what makes this thing work, that they know where they need to be focusing their time, where they need to be focusing their vaccines, the people they should be getting to. So she's taking statistics and throwing them out. She's throwing them out here today. She's saying that numbers are not important. She committed to a sequencing guideline with the federal government. She's thrown that one out. So I'm wondering today whether she will make it available, make these numbers that made her make a decision, or some of these great ideas that she's had that she's messed up. Well, I want her to table them here today, why she's made the decisions the way she has, and how she's going to fix it.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure what the Honourable Member is suggesting. Is the Honourable Member suggesting that pregnant women and children under 5 shouldn't be getting vaccinated first, Mr. Speaker? Because if that's what he's suggesting, Mr. Speaker, he's very, very wrong, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. Jessica and Kathleen, both of whom have joined us today in the House, have chosen to speak up for a mental health program that struggles daily to find its voice among other health care priorities. Treatment options for individuals suffering from eating disorders are severely stretched and are unable to meet the needs for adults, let alone the growing group of adolescents in need. While both Jessica and Kathleen can attest to the great work of both Dr. Aaron Keshen and his team, this team of professionals cannot continue to do this alone. My question to the Minister is, will the Minister please outline where the treatment of adult eating disorders fits in this government's plan for the future delivery of mental health services?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, mental health services, including mental health services for people who are afflicted with eating disorders, are extremely important, Mr. Speaker. My department is in the process of reviewing and putting together a strategy to respond to mental health issues from a variety of perspectives, and I can assure the Honourable Member that in that process we will certainly look closely at the needs for people who suffer from eating disorders.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, Jessica and Kathleen need a little bit more from this government than platitudes. We do need to see action. There are 7 adults on the wait list for the 3 inpatient beds available for adults with eating disorders across the province. At this rate, Mr. Speaker, many of these adults will be waiting a year for a bed and ongoing dedicated treatment. The reality is, however, that some of these patients may not have a year. Jessica is an extremely intelligent girl. She excelled at school. She's been accepted to university. She had a job that she loved but can no longer perform. And that, Mr. Speaker, is because she suffers from an eating disorder, which is a severe mental illness that requires treatment. There are many others like Jessica who are waiting for that opportunity to get assistance. My question to the Minister is, will the Minister please indicate whether she will be bringing forward a mental health plan in the near future that will address both Jessica and Kathleen's needs and concerns?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as I've already indicated, work is underway in the Department to review the services that we provide and to look at a more comprehensive approach to mental health services in the province, and part of that process will include looking at what is required for mental health services, including eating disorders. I'm pleased to say that we've added additional beds to our adolescent treatment program, the ACT program, at the IWK, Mr. Speaker, and the wait list for that particular program, which were appalling 2 years ago, have come down quite dramatically, Mr. Speaker. So progress is being made in some areas, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think we agree that there is a tremendous need for a mental health strategy in this province, and I'm pleased to hear the Minister say that she's working on it. I would like to hear when this might actually be a reality. We feel a sense of urgency around this issue, and I think there is a call for action on it. And Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask the Minister in particular about when they might improve the services for adults with eating disorders, because at present, Mr. Speaker, they these inpatient beds are actually in a locked unit in a psychiatric facility and or ward, and we believe that that's inappropriate for the type of service needed. So I want to know if the Minister has an answer to that question. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Again, Mr. Speaker, to the Honourable Member, we are reviewing mental health services throughout the province. We are looking at what would be required for more comprehensive approaches, and certainly providing services to people with eating disorders will be a part of that process. And I thank the Honourable Member for bringing this really important issue to the floor of the Legislature, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we certainly have heard the government, the NDPs, boasting about how they've handled this situation around H1N1. And I think, Mr. Speaker, I think we all have to agree that Nova Scotians are becoming confused more daily as a response to this very serious issue, as a result of the Premier and the Minister's attitude towards this whole issue of H1N1. Mr. Speaker, I would ask the Minister through you today if she would stand in the House and explain to this House how the allotments per province were determined. So in other words, how Nova Scotia was determined the number of allotments for the vaccine for Nova Scotia, and how she in turn is determining who in Nova Scotia receives the vaccine.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. It's a good question. I'm sure many people have this question. The vaccine is distributed on the basis of population per capita to the various provinces, with one exception, I believe, Mr. Speaker. I think that vaccine has gone into the northern communities, our northern territories, simply because of the nature of small, isolated communities and the need to get that vaccination to people as quickly as possible. So they have received all of their allotment. And once it comes into this province, Mr. Speaker, we also distribute the vaccine throughout the province to the DHAs based on the population of each DHA as well as their health care population. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians are being denied this vaccine en masse, and we believe it's because of the mismanagement from day one of this program. Mr. Speaker, in Cumberland County, many people are being denied this because they don't fit within the Minister's priority group. Mr. Speaker, a good example is young Emily Hoyk, who is 10 years old from River Hibbert, and she is asthmatic, but she is being told that even though she has asthma, she is not at high risk. Mr. Speaker, while the government's telling Emily she's not entitled to the vaccine, people from out of this province, from New Brunswick, are coming to Nova Scotia and, in fact, getting that very vaccine. Can the minister explain why she's allowing New Brunswickers into Nova Scotia to get the vaccine, yet denying Emily Hoyk, a 10-year-old asthma, who her mother Pam wants to know why she's not getting the vaccine?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the priority groups are pregnant women, children under the age of five, people from Aboriginal communities, and health care workers, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are other groups that we would like to get the vaccine to. Cancer patients, Mr. Speaker, with compromised immune systems, for example, we would like to get the vaccine to. But, Mr. Speaker, we have had a reduction in the amount of vaccine, which has required us to provide vaccine to the people who are at the highest risk of becoming very sick, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, the medical experts say that people with asthma, if it is well managed, are not as high a risk as pregnant women or children under the age of 5, Mr. Speaker. And that's the reason, Mr. Speaker. With respect to New Brunswick, residents from New Brunswick, I have no information that residents from New Brunswick are coming to Nova Scotia en masse. Perhaps residents from Nova Scotia are also attending clinics in New Brunswick, Mr. Speaker. We would have to look at that.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your final supplementary.
Speaker, Mr. Speaker, I find that answer absurd. I'll go to the Premier. Obviously, the Minister of Health is not prepared to answer the very question I ask her, so I'll go to the Premier. Well, Mr. Premier, it's a very serious issue. It is for Pam Hoyk, who has a 10-year-old daughter who wants this vaccine. We just learned moments ago a lady, the first casualty in Newfoundland, H1N1, was a person who had asthma. This young girl has asthma. Her mother is demanding that she have the vaccine. Mr. Speaker, it's been confirmed that people from New Brunswick are coming here because we're not asking them for MSI. It's an honour system. They're coming here, and if I heard the minister right, she said she's not aware of that happening. I just want to confirm that it is happening. There are people in New Brunswick coming here, and I want to ask through the Premier, you, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier, will the Premier do two things? Will he ensure that those vaccines who are intended for Nova Scotians, not New Brunswickers, will be guaranteed that Nova Scotians will get them? Maybe we would have more for Nova Scotia if that would happen. And the second thing is, Mr. Premier, will the Premier ensure today that Emily Hoyk, the 10-year-old girl from River Hibbert who has asthma, will get that vaccine as her mother wants her to?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can tell the member opposite that we're not aware that there are people from New Brunswick coming into the province for the purpose of getting the vaccine. Of course, in Nova Scotia, there would be students and there would be other people who would fall into those risk categories who, of course, would be should get those vaccines and it would be appropriate to do so. But I can tell the member opposite this. The decisions with respect to who gets these vaccines first will be based on science and will be based on medicine. And it will not be based on the interference of politicians in the process.
Order, order. Order. Order, please. Order. 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 The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the
Order.
Premier.
Order. The Leader of the Official Opposition. I'm going to remind members that the Leader of the Official Opposition has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. The Chief Electoral Officer made recommendations to the House following the June election. Specifically, she made recommendations including provisions of regulating third parties. She said, and I quote, "Regulation should include registration of third parties as well as expressed limits on the spending and reporting requirements with limits." So my question to the Premier is, what steps have you taken to regulate advertising by third parties during an election campaign?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Leader of the Official Opposition for the question. There's an Electoral Commission out there. They would have received the recommendations of the Chief Electoral Officer, and I'm sure that once they've had an opportunity to meet, they'll be willing to consider it.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier said he wants to level the playing field when it comes to election and campaign financing and I couldn't agree with them more, Mr. Speaker. So my question for the Premier, when will you set forth spending limits and a requirement for registration of third parties who wish to directly endorse a political party?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, there's an electoral commission. If they come forward with a series of recommendations, we'd be happy to have a look at them.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Recommendation put before this House. There's been a recommendation put before this House around third party. All the Premier has to do is show a little leadership, introduce a bill, and we'll pass it. Mr. Speaker, my caucus, my party, and I'm sure every member in this House respects the right of any group to advertise and declare that group's support of a candidate or any registered political party. All the Chief Electoral Officer is asking is that they register and be subject to spending limits and that they disclose what they are doing. Anyone can see the logic of being open and transparent. It's just a basic matter of fairness. So my question for the Premier is, when can we expect you to act on the Chief Electoral Officer's recommendation?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, when the Electoral Commission considers it, comes forward with a set of recommendations, once the Commission has an opportunity to consider it, we'll be happy to have a look at it.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, it's been 2 years since Bill 38 was passed, which would put an end to expiry dates on gift cards. But, Mr. Speaker, it's still meaningless since the regulations to that law have not been enacted. Mr. Speaker, BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Ontario all have similar laws, and in the 2 years that we've been waiting for our law to come into effect, New Brunswick has passed one of its own. The Retail Council of Canada supports regulation of expiry dates, and so do Nova Scotians. Even the Premier's own party supports these regulations. So my question to the Minister is quite simple, Mr. Speaker. When will the regulations to that law be enacted?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much for that question. I appreciate you bringing that to the floor today. The issue of the gift cards is very important to people in Nova Scotia, and there has been a bit of a delay in the regulations being through the process because of the House. So there was a bit of a delay. I would like to have been able to say they would have been ready in this last couple of weeks. But unfortunately, they've been delayed a little bit, but I will guarantee you they will be ready for the Christmas season. We will be able to announce that in another couple of weeks. So thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm a little bit, is usually not 2 years, but Mr. Speaker, the Minister might want to consult with the Minister of Economic and Rural Development because it was his bill that was actually passed, and quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, that Minister is somewhat confused by the inaction of his own government on this issue. And he even wrote last year to the Chronicle Herald stating, and I quote, "It's puzzling to me why the government has taken so long to make this happen," end quote. Mr. Speaker, before the Minister does what she usually does and blames the previous government, I'd like to remind her that she has had ample time to enact these regulations. So after 2 years of waiting, after this government has been in power for over 4 months, I'd like to know, even though she said today that she's going to do it, I'd like to know why those regulations have not been enacted before now.
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When coming into office, it was one of the first issues that I looked at, and I've been in constant contact with my colleague around this issue. I, too, may share your frustration that it's taking longer than we would have liked. It has been held up with lawyers making sure all of the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, I know that we are all anxious for this to come forward, but I will guarantee you in the next couple of weeks we will have that ready for Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Heaven knows it's easy enough to blame lawyers, Mr. Speaker. But I'm glad to hear the minister. I'm glad to hear the minister give her answer. And my final question for the minister is, just to make sure and just to reassure Nova Scotians that they're going to be, what the minister is saying, that they're going to be protected in time for this Christmas shopping season.
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We will be able to take the expiry date off of gift cards for the upcoming Christmas season. Unfortunately, because there was a bit of a delay, we have to make sure that the industry is informed of this procedure. But for the Christmas buying season, expiry dates will not be an issue for Nova Scotians. So thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection. Mr. Speaker, yesterday I put forth a resolution in this House urging the government to include volunteer firefighters in the priority group for H1N1 vaccinations. Yet, to my disappointment, the government voted against that resolution. In doing this, Mr. Speaker, the government has turned its back on the brave men and women who continually put themselves in harm's way for the well-being of our communities and who ask for nothing in return. My question to the minister is, why have volunteer firefighters not been included in the priority group for H1N1 vaccinations?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, volunteer firefighters aren't in that group, Mr. Speaker, because there's no evidence that they would get very, very sick if they got H1N1, unlike pregnant women and children under the age of 5 and the other groups, Mr. Speaker. And I know many volunteer firefighters, and I doubt very much, Mr. Speaker, that they would want to go to the head of the line ahead of these groups, Mr. Speaker. They would fully understand, and I'm sure they fully understand, why it is that the groups that are getting vaccine first, pregnant women and kids under 5 and so forth, Mr. Speaker, are the people who have to be at the head of that line.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, as we're all aware, it was everyone. Mr. Speaker, as we all know, the duties of volunteer firefighters extend beyond putting out fires. They're often the first responders to medical and other emergencies within their communities, especially rural communities. Their efforts have made the difference between life and death for countless Nova Scotians, yet while many of these firefighters are subjecting themselves to increased dangers when responding to medical emergencies such as H1N1, the government refuses to include them in the priority group. Mr. Speaker, the Health System Pandemic Plan has a list of potential essential services, and guess what? Firefighters are included on that list. My question, Mr. Speaker, is now that the minister realizes her gross error in judgment, will she personally step in and immediately make volunteer firefighters part of the priority group so that they can continue to safely do their invaluable work on behalf of our communities?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government very much values the efforts of volunteer firefighters and first responders, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, we have limited vaccine, and the vaccine we have has to go to people who will become the sickest if they get H1N1. And, Mr. Speaker, that is pregnant women, children under the age of 5, Mr. Speaker, and residents of First Nations communities. And, as well, we have to keep our health care workers in our hospitals well, Mr. Speaker. There are many, many other groups that provide emergency services that will have to wait until we have the supplies to meet the vaccinations for that group, Mr. Speaker, including first responders in the volunteer fire departments.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes and your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't think the Minister realises that many of these volunteer firefighters throughout this province are also medical first responders that go in to people's homes. Mr. Speaker, the need for volunteers across our province is great. Their value to the community cannot be measured. The government needs to do more to encourage volunteerism by ensuring that their efforts are properly recognised. However, the complete opposite is happening here. No clear signal can be sent than refusing to make these brave individuals a priority for vaccinations. My question, Mr. Speaker, is what does the Minister or her NDP government have to say to volunteer firefighters across Nova Scotia about why she does not see them worthy enough of receiving the priority vaccine?
The Honourable Minister of Health, Promotion and Protection.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, it's obvious that that member doesn't understand the purpose of sequencing the vaccine so it would get to the people who need it the most, who would become the sickest, Mr. Speaker, and who would be in very many cases end up hospitalized, Mr. Speaker, and on ventilators or in ICUs, Mr. Speaker. There is not one shred of medical evidence, Mr. Speaker, that first responders would be the people who would become the sickest if they acquired H1N1, Mr. Speaker. There will be vaccine for this group, but, Mr. Speaker, they are not at the top of the pack, and they cannot go back to the front of the line, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. My question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, on January 22nd of this year, the Department of Economic and Rural Development, through the Industrial Expansion Fund, provided $12 million to Bay Ferries Limited. This money was to cover financial losses on its Yarmouth to Maine service and to allow the CAT to be able to continue operations in 2009. So my question to the Minister, would the Minister please report to this House exactly how much of that $12 million was spent this year on ferry operations?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And through you, Mr. Speaker, to the member opposite, is that we are currently looking at, and we have been looking at, Bay Ferries for the last few weeks. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I just met with Bay Ferries operations probably within the last 2 to 3 weeks. The purposes of that meeting was, one was to get an update. One was also to look at the future of Bay Ferries as it pertains to the problems of Nova Scotia. Three was also to look at what we have been doing for the last couple of years with Bay Ferries. And as we know, Bay Ferries now operates under an agreement with the province of Nova Scotia. And I think, if my memory serves me correct, Mr. Speaker, I think it's $6 million for a subsidy, and then there was a $3 million transition fee in there if the service did discontinue. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Clare on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the service cited changes in fuel costs and economic challenges for the reason that it needed this assistance. So my question to the Minister, has Bay Ferries Limited contacted your office for assistance for the 2010 season?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I reiterate is that I've had a meeting with Bay Ferry Services. Under the current structure, There's two pieces of Bay Ferries. One piece is associated with the Yarmouth end of the province, and the other is with respect to Digby. So there are two contracts, if you will, Mr. Speaker, one that runs out next year and one that there still be another year to go. And so the short answer is that the contact that I've had with Bay Ferries wasn't with respect to, it wasn't an axe, Mr. Speaker. It was one of information sharing, and they wanted us to get up to snuff as to where we were and where they were as far as headspace was concerned.
The Honourable Member for Clare on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is an important service that it's an economic generator for the area and which also serves to stimulate tourism in Nova Scotia. So my final question to the Minister, would the Minister please inform Nova Scotians whether the Department of Economic and Rural Development is looking at assisting Bay Ferries Limited in the 2010 season?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, the purpose of the meeting is to go down, pursue a path as to where we're going to be a year or 2 years from now. I will say, Mr. Speaker, that the member opposite is right, is that this is very, very important to Nova Scotians. We've got a huge decision to make. One is based on business...
Order. The time for oral question period has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the Legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.